Kahiaka. This is Maka'ala, and I will be joined by Mauna Kea Trask in a moment. I want to just simply say, to begin, I began my morning by listening to our Congresswoman Jill Tokuda talking about laying lei on the Kamehameha statue. Oh my goodness, I did, for those of you that follow me on Facebook, I did repeat it, sent it onward into the universe. She's so spot on, she's so strong, she's so clear, and she's not making a mystery of the situation in Hawaii. She's telling our story and telling the truth. So today, Mauna Kea and I are going to diverge a little bit from the concept of Pilikia Opono, which was based on the idea of development and what it meant in kingdom time and what it means now. But today, we have decided, for a variety of reasons that neither one of us could define, that we're going to talk a little bit more about history, and what people were guided by, what people were thinking in the old days. We thank you, Mauna Kea, for joining us. For Mauna, this is a work day, and he's been bouncing back and forth between Kauai and Oahu with his legal work, but one of these days we'll get him back in the studio because we know that's always a little bit more energetic. So, at any rate, good morning, Mauna Kea. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing well. I was listening to Warren Zevon's Lawyers, Guns, and Money this morning. Probably not as historic as yours, but definitely entertaining.
Yeah. It's interesting. I were we always like this? Were we always aware of the threats and challenges to our place? I don't think so. I think at one point we probably thought we were just copacetic, but there's an old word. But the threats to this place and the challenges to living here and the rules and order that had to be established in order for us to function in a civil way, a civil society, required a structure. All cultures do. And ours is pretty complex. We seldom had just one entity to whom we felt complete and total loyalty. We seldom had just one goal as a nation people of Oceania. I think we always knew that we were a part of a larger experience, larger puzzle. I think we were reminded of that with Hokulea, and we're reminded of it again today with all the challenges to all of Oceania and how it's coming together. But it's important once in a while to stop and look back and if you don't know, learn and think and use the parts that are useful to you and not the parts that aren't. So today, Mauna Kea has decided, well, at least he had the other day. We'll see if he's changed his mind, because that does happen. To talk about the theology of the place a little bit. Are we still on that track today, or have we changed course?
I don't know. You threw a squirrel out there with what Jill Tukuda, was she talking about the civil suits against Hawaiians or something?
No,
or
she was saying that she was saying you can't honor Kamehameha by just laying lei, you know, that there's way more to it than understanding Hawaii's needs and defending our culture and protecting our place and fighting. She's been doing them fighting words for a while now, and some of her speeches and comments on the floor and elsewhere have been have been energizing. I'm finding her very inspiring.
I thought she was saying you can honor Kamehameha by not suing Kamehameha schools, but
she didn't go there today.
Okay.
She'll go there, but right. She didn't go there today.
Talking abstract.
Yeah, others have gone there. Stop suing us.
I just love how the coolest thing about that, or not the coolest, I'm not going to say that, but a cool thing about that is, like, given where everything is in the nation right now, I mean, to put a lay on a king in D.C. is pretty wild. I love that. Highlights our uniqueness. Pardon the car alarm in the
for
back.
For those of you that have never been in Statuary Hall in the Capitol, it's quite interesting. First of all, it's, of course, educational. But they had Kamehameha tucked away back in a corner. And when I asked about that, one of their explanations was, well, that particular sculpture is very heavy, and we had to put extra support under it. And I went, yeah, right. And I was not in a tour group. I was there with my husband, and we were doing a private kind of thing. But I loudly said, and anything you say over a whisper in Statuary Hall is echoes through the halls. I mean, it's an amazing room. And I said rather loudly, well, that's a bunch of poppycock. he certainly deserves a more prominent position. And the statue is now in a more prominent position. So, but you know,
complained.
honoring him. I don't care if you had to pour more cement. Screw it. Do it.
That's so funny.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Andy Makaala's trip, was it Washington, D.C. trip?
Oh, it was so funny. It was so funny because my husband and I wore matching clothes because I thought it would be sweet. And so we had palaka, homemade palaka, long-sleeve shirt, and mu'u with the full deal, black and white palaka. And as we roamed the halls, and I don't know why in the world they would ever let us loose, as we roamed the halls and we went several places, everywhere we went, they asked us, oh, are you the entertainment? I said, well,
that's so funny.
That may be some people's perspective, but it's not why we're here. Somewhere there's floating around a picture of both of us sitting at Senator Inouye's desk, which is, I found it funny then. I find it hysterically funny now. Where did all of this come from? And what, you know, what is one of the way you explained it to me the other day on the phone, my takeaway was one of the ways in which we differ, or do we? Did other cultures have multi-member squadron of gods? Some did, yeah. There were some that did, but Hawaii really took pretty seriously. We had a god for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We had a god for rain and sun and dirt and fish and whatever. It sounds to me like every step you took, you had to pray to somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
that at least keeps your steps solid and keeps you focused on what you're doing. Sway.
I was thinking about...
Whenever he starts a sentence with that, it freaks me out.
Well, I mean, honestly, we weren't thinking about anything that you called on Monday. Like, okay, what are we talking about Wednesday? And I was like, I don't even know.
Hadn't thought about that.
I've been reading up on, I think the phrase is Kekini Akua, which is the many gods, many thousands of gods. And so Hawaiians were, it's interesting, like, you know, Hindus are polytheistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Hindu religion is just a ton of gods. Mm-hmm. And aspects of gods. And Hawaii was like that. And again,
everything in Hawaii was interrelated in Hawaiian culture. So there was no separation. And we always say this, there's no separation of church and state. And so really appreciating what that means, I think, always thinking about that's interesting. Because then you get to, you know, what's the effect of that? And the interesting thing about Hawaiian polytheism is that it understood that there is infinite number of gods, and it allowed for everyone to have their own. And so there was like the big males, men had gods, women had gods. Each profession had their own god. And it was like, not only were they polytheistic, but they were pantheistic too. So all the gods were, they weren't like spiritual individuals that could change shape. They were actually the natural phenomena that their, you know, whatever their kinolau was. So Hiiaka was the lehua blossom, right? Or Pele was the lava. Kataloa was the ocean. And so when you think about it that way, yeah, you're always present. It's like mindfulness, right? You're always thinking about this and that. But at the same time, it's interesting because their idea of sanctity, I mean, no one really did it better than the Polynesians and Kapu. And Hawaiians developed Kapu, I think, even more formally than other Polynesian places. But at the same time, like Hawaiians, the interesting thing is they worshipped and sanctified everything, but they also had no problem killing gods and getting rid of them. And Captain Cook was like a perfect example, right? There was a debate whether or not the Hawaiians really deified Captain Cook, whether or not they really thought he was Lono. And the scholarship generally settled they did, and they killed him too. And like what that means for society, and also kind of like the tolerance of it, right? Because if everyone has their own god and you recognize there's this, you know, existing infinite pool of gods, then you're kind of letting people be and do their thing as long as it doesn't encroach upon you. And then now when we're dealing with today, these ideas, I think a lot of conflicts are basically rooted in still religious beliefs, or at least a lot of them, right?
Yeah, for sure. Wars are being fought daily based on religious beliefs. I've been a pantheist all my life, and I think in spite of my parents' efforts to make, or my mother's efforts to make me one way or the other, she did introduce me to all different kinds of faiths and approaches to faith, and it never made sense to me. It just never made sense to me, because to me, everything was a system. And even as a kid, I remember thinking, and I got this from the woman who took care of me when I was seven, was Palawan. The woman who took care of me before that was Filipino. And she didn't particularly practice one way or the other. She felt as though everything had betrayed her, and she ran to us as an escape. But the Palawans that took care of me after that were students. They were high school students. There was no high school in those days in Koror. So they came to live in our house and help my mother with me and the house, etc. But I learned my perspective of, especially the ocean, but my perspective of islandness and connectedness. Since I grew up with people from other places, I never felt centrist about where I was. I never felt like it was, you know, the place, you know, or the most important thing, or the any kind of leader or anything like that. I never was aware of any of that. I thought we were always part of a system. And because the Micronesians still practiced a lot of pantheism, that everything had a spirit. And I don't remember her praying before she took something out of the sea, but I remember her getting quiet, thoughtful each time. I assume she was praying. but the ripe old age of 7, I was just interested in eating whatever she was producing. I think for us, and I don't know how this plays out in our legal system, because in our legal system, in my recent experience in our legal system, they really try to isolate the issues. We're not talking about that today. We're talking about this today. We can't, you know, this is the singular issue, and these are the sources, and these are the justifications and reasons, and this is what we're going to do. And I really have a challenge with that, because it's just not true. Everything is connected. If you're going to do something, see, we thought this wasn't going to connect to development, but I really think it does.
Everything does, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're proposing something, then in those days you had to consider many gods. In today's times, we have to consider many laws and many components, right? I mean, you can't just say this isn't right because it's green or blue. This isn't right because where it is, or it is right because of where it is, what its purpose is, and it follows the laws, et cetera, et cetera. Still kind of multi, right? Still kind of.
It's specialized too. So, like with the legal stuff, nowadays you have different authorities with different authority.
Isn't that what multi gods were? Different authorities.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, like, and we've talked about this before. You know, before you built a hale, a heiau, anything, and Hawaiians are building everything everywhere. According to their, you know, their the needs.
Yeah.
Without regard to, with regard to placement and construction. So they had, you know, in a sense, their own zoning and building codes.
Yeah, even though they didn't have ownership, they still had deference and understanding of appropriate placement.
I don't think that's true.
Huh.
This is going to be a hot one. But I, you know, ownership, they didn't have paper title because they didn't write. So that's true. But the concept of, like, ownership, like, that's a ill-defined term, I think, in that context. And hear me out. Because when, kind of working backwards, so you have the Kuleana Act, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone agrees that the Kuleana Act, that's where Maka'ainana got theirs in the Mahele or subsequent.
That's an ownership.
Yeah, and you had, in the Kuleana claim, the Maka'ainana had to show exclusive use of, you know, whether it was a house lot or ag lot or ikalo, mala, whatever it was. And you had to show that you had been there and you had obtained it from someone with authority. So, like, you know, Hyena Kuleana claims, it all goes back to, like, oh, I got it from Kumuli'i, or Kakela gave it to me, or I got it from Paki, or whatever it was. And that was substantiated by foreign and native witnesses. But a lot of those claims were denied. Well, not a lot, but claims were denied. And people would say, like, oh, you moved away a couple of years ago. You don't live here anymore. And that was it. But to show that exclusive ownership meant that was yours. And Hawaiians did respect boundaries. And they own their own personal articles and effects.
Mm-hmm.
And you would never wear somebody else's clothes because their mana was in those clothes. And if you wore, like, a chief's mala, forget it. You're getting killed. And, you know, if you read fragments of Hawaiian history, they'd wipe a whole town if that happened because you're violating the kapu at the highest levels. And but then going into the konohiki and stuff, so I think at the Kuleana level, you could own land or it was recognized generally as yours. Within that structure, you know, the chief owning, you know, whoever that was the reigning ali'i at the time. And during that ali'i's term, they were the trustee in total. Correct, they didn't own the land and they could pass it down. But they could as long as they maintained their power. So everything was predicated upon this power structure, which was in turn tied into religion, you know, which is gods and on political power. But they had authority and ownership in that sense. So, like, if you got a trust and you're the trustee, you can sell the land. You can act as owner of the land. But they understood, yeah, that you the Konohiki's larger land claim was subject to the rights of native tenants because they needed that labor force. Because labor was so important in ancient Hawaii because that was the organizing, you know, that was the backs upon which they built everything. They had no beasts of burden, no cows, no horses, no ox. So literally you put it on a makainana's back and they would do
manpower.
It. Manpower. So you needed that. Yeah, it was manpower. So you needed that relationship. Therefore, you needed to take care of the people. So the fee simple Western idea of ownership did not apply. But that's because there's so many other factors that didn't apply. But the Polynesian concept of ownership did apply. And so I just think it's a little too much to say there was no ownership, meaning there was communal. No, because you could never go on the chief's area. You know what happened if you went to the heiau? You couldn't, you know, some kind of Luakini heiau. That was not allowed. Right? You couldn't go every place. So anyway,
we've said that before, and I've said I've said that before. Not everyone. I say it today, in some of the legal stuff that I find myself quagmired in. Not everybody gets to go every place. Just had a conversation the other night with, I guess yesterday. Don't even remember where the hell it was, but. The loss of access. And they were specifically talking about local places that I know, and that I had done some work around access and the discussion of access, and they're just wrong. That it's just wrong to think that it's not. I don't think it's true anywhere on the planet. Or was ever true that everybody got to go everywhere? Certainly not every time they like. And that was the point of having gatherings and festivals and things like that, was, you know, some of that. But as it relates to the multi-theism, to all the gods, to all the God, there were lots and lots of gods because there were lots and lots of things to be considered. There are lots and lots of things to protect. There are lots and lots of things to nurture and to guide and to teach. I mean, I'm still struggling with the lessons Pele has, but yeah, well, she and I will talk some point in the future, I'm sure.
I think you said, you talked about Pule and reciting Pule when you gather.
Yeah, we still do.
And engage in stuff. Yeah, I think that there is, and that's where a lot of, I think there's so much in that, those Pule, like practical knowledge.
Yes.
And largely scientific knowledge is just in there. And to recite the Pule, to do it correctly, the repetition of it, the having to start again if you made a mistake. I mean, that's old school rote education, right? And so, and because of that, Hawaiians are able to memorize genealogies because, again, they had no written language. And so you have all this stuff, and that is how knowledge was passed down. In any society, the more effectively you can pass down knowledge, it seems the more you can do. The larger your population can be, the more resources you can manage, the more you can grow and be prosperous. And so the religious aspect of all this, I think where we're going with it is recognizing the importance of religion, but not the supremacy, I think, or whether
yes.
or not that's,
yes.
that's your thing, that's fine.
No, as a guide,
yeah.
guidance and as acknowledgement and recognition as you moved from one area of the aina to the other, depending on the movement itself, the location itself, the purpose for your movement, the purpose for your going, request to enter, respect of the place, request to gather, the purpose of your gathering. I mean, the Pule that I was taught as a kid was three things. One, to recognize when you went from one realm to the other, and two, to ask permission, and three, to explain the reason for your travel, the reason for you being there. You didn't just wander around aimlessly. You didn't have time for that. Right? So there wasn't time for that.
That was a huge vice. The interesting thing is now is like recreational use has
leisure.
Been elevated to it's a virtue. It's like a sanctified virtue now, which is really like a modern, wealthy thing. You know, I mean, our grandparents did not travel. You know what I mean?
For no reason.
And
they didn't travel for no reason.
No. That was definitely an upper crust.
Oh, there were some explorers that just wanted to go and learn and discover. So that, but that was still what had a reason. My grandmother traveled internationally, but for a reason. She was proselytizing women's rights. Wonder she wasn't shot. In a time when that wasn't done, I'm going to take a little break here and say you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA, Kilauea. Yeah, after what, 10 years, Laura's clapping. It's only taken a freaking decade to get me halfway SEAL trained to say that. And this is Pilikia Opono. And if you don't know what the words mean, look them up. Use Ulukau, use Vehe Vehe, use whatever. The internet has given you the opportunity to look some of look anything up. I was having a conversation with a young neighbor the other day, and she said, you know, we've got this neighbor, da 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 da. And she had her definition of neighbor was pretty interesting. And I said, go to Google Earth and show me where this neighbor exists. And he was like, you know, three or four lots over. And I said, that's not my definition of a neighbor. But what we had was the look it up. See what you're talking about, which is what you do and I don't. I count on you to do it because I don't like to. But I'd rather just fly free until somebody says turn around. I think that the point of having multi-gods was because you had multi-needs and multi-purposes and multi-threats. You know, that if you're going into a realm in the forest where the weather changes or whatever, then there was a god to address that. And you needed to acknowledge that and recognize that. It was kind of an educational trip, right? It was like, oh, wait, I've just gone from that to this, and now there's a different God. The God was a way of defining the different location and purpose.
Like the organizing effect, and you touched on something I think really important. And so it's this idea that narrative to humans, right, is something that we're wired for. It's like it's a cognitive, neurological thing. And so, like you said, I just paid respect to the god of the internet and looked something up. And so, and it says, and according to AI, which is like reaching deification.
You're never going to tell me there's not a god of the internet, folks. You're never going to tell me that because I know it. Yeah. I know it. If the purpose of my search or the purpose of my work is all mixed up, that god of the internet bites me in the butt every time. It just does.
Yeah, it's at least an oracle. You know, like Delphi didn't have anything on Google AI. So according to our oracle, human narrative inclination, it's an innate cognitive drive to process, organize, and understand the world through stories.
Yeah.
Rather than relying solely on pure data, abstract logic, and da da da. Humans naturally map chaos into cause and effect structures, which is creates the storytelling instinct. And evolutionarily, for early humans, sharing stories was a survival skill that allowed groups to pass down critical knowledge regarding food, dangers, and social cooperation, and also led to social cohesion. Neurochemically, apparently, highly immersive narratives trigger the release of oxytocin in the brain, creating emotional resonance, trust, and deep empathy with story characters. Hmm. And it just goes on. So I think that understanding, you know, religion now and what it means now, it's interesting. It's evolving, definitely. A lot of stuff is changing. You know, even just seeing the kind of the resurgence of the Catholic Church is really interesting.
It is. It is. And all it took was one change.
Yeah, or one change in a lot of changes. So you have the world changing, geopolitics changing, and the Catholic Churches and the Pope's reaction to that, and the election of, you know, a guy from Chicago.
That's the point I'm making. You know, I just watched him earlier this morning, and the response. It's reverence as it should be given his position in that institution, but. But he's a teacher, and he's a listener, and if he wasn't, you know, stuck in that structure, he'd be one heck of an activist. You know, he's.
Well, he kind of is. I think he's showing you the work one can do within the system. And there's no, I mean, name a more, formal system than the Catholic Church. Yikes.
Yes.
Like that's definitely established.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, going to it, I think, it the Poulet and the traditions hold so much in that way that we can learn from it. And but at the same time, it's like, it's interesting. And what is good Pilikia and Pono about it nowadays? You know, and in the local, in a different context, and because the Hoi, you can't really transpose everything they did pre-contact to now, because Hoi is different now. You know, the land is different, the plants are different, the people are different. But what can we use to move forward together in the canoe?
I wonder how many judges Poulet before they walk out onto the bench. Just curiosity killed the kitty cat. I wonder, because they focus. I'm sure they have the judges. I'm sure they have a way to focus themselves. You know, otherwise it'd be so it would be scrambling, right? So it'd be interesting to ask them. You know, how they, some of them, do that. It appears they do in a way, because I'm sure they at least take a deep breath. Except for the ones on TV, which don't appear to breathe at all. I just think that it focuses you. To me, multi-theism, multi-theism is pantheism, but to me, it just focuses me on what it is I'm doing and why it is I'm doing it. And once in a while, I will say, once in a while, I hear in my head, well, that's not the right thing for this place at this moment, and backs me up a little bit, you know, which I think that's the point of it, right? Having multi gods, they didn't exist for no reason. They each had a job. And
organization was important too, because you live in such a small place. I mean, gods had their own times. You know, the year Makahiki, Kao, the year was split, and I was, what was it? Oh, Aaron was sharing something with me recently about some historic stuff. Oh, I sat in on her class.
I was asking you to do that, and you said you weren't going to do it. I'm so glad you did.
Oh, no, totally. I.
Does that drive her nuts? Because I can hear her now. What are you doing?
Yeah, and it was great. Like, I'm so jealous that she gets to go to school.
Oh, yeah, I am too.
Everyone should go back to school if you can.
I want to go back to school, too. Except I'd still be the same pain in the ass I was when I was there before.
You know, when Captain Cook came and he was touring, going through the islands, doing his thing, when he came to the Big Island, it was Makahiki.
Oh.
And Kalaniopuu was the reigning chief at the time, and, you know, his god was Ku. And so he kind of, he was stepping back because it was Lono's time. And Captain Cook just kind of by, you know, happenstance was, his boat looked like, I mean, everything about him looked Lono, you know, everything. And so people were like, well, you know, it's like as if Martians came down and they were, had beards, shoulder length hair and a white robe, you'd be like, oh, that guy looks like Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, he really looks the part. So gotta be. And, so Kalaniopuu is following Captain Cook at a respectful distance and, just kind of keeping an eye on him. And then when Captain Cook goes into, Kealakekua Bay, which was where Lono was supposed to anchor. So everyone's like, hey, he's back. Look at this. Kalaniopuu paddles in the area and he raises Kukailimoku to everybody. And then there, you know, Dr. Kirch is talking about what that means and, you know, the scholarship of it. And I'm thinking about it like, and whether it was directed, I think he even mentioned it was directed at Captain Cook, and which I'm not arguing with. But I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking, what would Cook know? I mean, maybe, yeah, he was Lono and they thought that, but I'm sure the people around in the, you know, all the Hawaiians that were there, which was everybody, they see their ali'i raising up his god going, hey guys, I'm still a man. You know, this is still, this is temporary. This is his time. Wait a couple months, it's my time. And that's why when Cook came back and he tried to, you know, he got a little high-handed. Kalaniopuu, they took care of him. And going back to, gods are also fungible, you know, and if you're out of your space, if you're out of your time, you don't have any power. And it's just such an interesting, it's like two sides of like permissiveness and tolerance, like the tolerance to allow for other gods, but also the tolerance to significantly and adversely affect what is sacred at one time. It's not everywhere. Like you said, if certain places, and maybe that's rooted in resource management.
Yeah, I was just going to say, monotheism simply wouldn't work. It simply wouldn't work. It wouldn't feed the people. It wouldn't work. And so it just, practicality is, you know, in order to have the work get done and the people get fed and to thrive, or at least not starve to death, there were multiple tasks to be done, and each one of those tasks needed a motivation, needed a focus, needed a leader, needed a reason to be done. Because if you tell me that I got to go build that railroad, I'm going to tell you, I don't think I need a train. I can ride a horse. You know, right? And so, unless you're just guided by the, you know, but monetarily, but that never worked. I even today, if you practice hula, and my hula is very limited, but if you practice hula, you know, I'm one of the things I'm most proud of in the resurgence of the Hawaiian historical culture is hula and its evolvement, the acknowledgement. They do acknowledge different gods when they go to gather their materials for whatever they're going to perform. They acknowledge all of that, and their practices are an acknowledgement of the multi-layers of realms, at least, if not the gods of those realms, at least of the realms. It's very interesting to me that one of every, I mean, maybe there are some people out there that don't appreciate the new modern approaches to hula. I love it, but they always incorporate some of the old stuff as well. some of the traditional stuff as well, to bring us back to, and this is the reason we do this. These are the things we use to tell the story. They do pulé. They absolutely do. I don't know any halal that doesn't. That gathers. My own personal garden is intended for hula and has a lot of hula materials growing in it for that purpose. And the halal will call or a student will call and ask to come gather. And I always say yes, but they must gather appropriately and correctly, which means they don't use a knife for me. They're always very careful asking me what and where, which one, auntie, which one can I take? And, you know, and I'm more interested in the how than I am the what and where. But it's an interesting, as a pantheist, I wish we would go back, if it's going back. I'm not sure it's back, but to that multi-theism, to that multi-god system, where things are individualized.
I'm smiling right now because I think that, you bring up a couple really good points, and hula is one of the places where this stuff still is super real.
Yeah.
And my daughters were, and even Aaron was were lucky enough to dance very briefly for Kumulina Ala Pavawa Jardine.
Yeah, oh my.
Who recently passed, but she brought it back for real. Like,
for
she
real?
Would place Rishikapu on her students, you know, during what you call a Merry Monarch season.
Right.
And, you know, that we all know the myth, the legend of the Naupaka, right?
Yes.
The two lovers split.
Yes.
And the male in the mountain, you know, but I never knew. And this was I don't know if it was Wickman or whoever, but in the Hyena book, that was a Kumuhula story. Like, the Kumuhula put a kapu on her dancers, like, don't hook up. And she caught him. And she killed them both and turned them into flowers and separated them forever. And that's what you get. You know, like, hula, the saying, people say it now, it's like, hula is life. And I remember when we were talking about, Aaron and I were talking about the girls joining. And I was like, man, this is real. Like, I don't, the commitment that involves as parents.
I was just going to say the parental commitment.
Oh, man.
When one of your children is involved in it is consuming. You turn your life over to that kumu in so many ways, and not just time. An effort, but you know, travel and talking and behavior and it's and what you eat and how you clean yourself, and I mean it's if you're doing it, if you're really doing it, and it's supposed to. And men stand back, because that's, you know, unless you're in doing hula yourself. Just stand back and be as helpful as you can, because these women are focused and working hard, and there's a lot to it. And again,
it's all
multi-gods.
The whole family.
Yeah.
My sister danced. Man, I was like 13, 14. I had to stay up to like 2 in the morning and clean. You know, I had to sweep the...
Yeah. Well, that was your job. You were the guy.
But getting to what you said, like, I wish it would come back. I mean, and that's kind of what we're talking about right now. It's all here now. Nothing's changed. I mean, we're very contradictory on the show. Like, oh, everything's changed, but nothing's changed. And that's true in a polytheistic society. And also, too, I just want to say, for those out there who are shaking their heads, like,
there were ideas in, because Hawaii was truly polytheistic, there were ideas that there was a supreme god. You know, some people said Io, the hawk, was the Kinalau of a supreme god, or was the supreme god itself. That's, you know, you have Iolani. That name is out there. But then other people thought they were totally unimportant. And there is Hawaiian atheists, too, apparently. Malo mentions that some Hawaiians had no gods.
Really?
And so it was a complete society. Oh, yeah.
How'd they function?
But then they were like, you know, he described them as smelling like goats and living in the mountains in caves because they were listless. So, which was not a virtue.
Well, they were just screwing up all over the place.
Yeah, you're just being, you know,
selfish.
Hanging at the, doing nothing.
Yeah, yeah, you were not contributing to society. Yeah,
Pray to the god of the land use attorneys, or the god of the
I love it. I love it. The god of the land use attorneys. Oh, man, we need a name. We need a name so bad. I think you work on that, Mona. That should be a degree all in itself. There's a PhD. The god had developed a god of the land use attorneys. They recently honored, by the way, folks, Mona Kea is one of the Hawaii's prominent land use attorneys, and I immediately texted, I think I texted your wife first and said, oh Lord, here we go.
Yeah, hey, every morning I pray to Kulo'io Aina.
Now what do we do with him? But
I'm going to push it. Push
of course
it.
You are. I'm glad she knew it. Yeah, well, diddly squat. One of the things that made me think of it while you were talking there was it is compartmentalized. If you're going to do a development, there's parts and pieces to that, right? And you can define that as the god of this. You have to think about how it's going to impact the water. Well, you could say there's a god of the water. How it's going to impact the land, you have to think about that. You have to think about, you know, I can see defining those as realms of gods.
Kapa'akai.
I can see that as an acknowledgement of, well, it is. It's an acknowledgement of practice. But it's also an acknowledgement of responsibility of gods. A certain god takes care of that part, and you better understand what the deal is there before you proceed. Don't pour that concrete till you've thought this through, until you've really understood the place where you're pouring it, right?
That's right. But and on that point, though, upon proper observation of the kapu and recitation of the pule, you get to pour. Like and this goes to a really interesting concept that I've kind of been, I thought of for a while, but I think unlike the popular narrative now, development did not equal desecration in ancient Hawaii. Hawaiians erected heiau, the largest, I mean,
they
aside
built a
from
lot of stuff.
Yeah. And they, you know, so when you go to like Pu'uhonua Honaunau, the city of refuge in Kealakekua Bay. Mm-hmm. That was developed according, I mean, that's a famous site, you know.
Totally developed,
and
too.
And no one's going to, what is that?
Totally developed, too. I mean,
Absolutely.
It's a built thing.
Yeah, no shoreline setback and seawalls.
Poke, right? Poke.
There's a quarry on Mauna Kea. There are heiau at the top, you know, if you go to Poliahu in Wailua, right there on the top of the cliff. And so, like, Hawaiians built things, places. And so, but it had to be the right way. You're right. Only after proper consideration. And that's what the Planning Commission does. It gives a proper consideration. You know, if you look at that as a space, right.
Be interesting to introduce the concept of multi-theism to that conversation, to testify before the Planning Commission saying, well, you're stepping on this god's toes when you do that. You're stepping on that god's toes when you do that, and see and watch them wiggle and squirm. Because everybody thinks they separate church and state, and they don't actually hear, which is the point you made earlier.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is, though, I'm not aware of, you know, as long as the couple were observed, and like there was intentionality, right? Couple was binding. And so when you had the right intention and you complied with the right rules, then, you know, amama uanoa, it was free. You could fly. And the same thing when you look at, it's really interesting. You look at the comprehensive zoning ordinance in section 1.4, it says, you know, these are, it shall be permissive, right? The intent of the zoning code is permissive, not restrictive, permissive, and shall be held to the minimum standards in order to, so people can build houses and we can do the thing, we can do ag, we can do things to live on the island, because you need to take care of the people. You need a labor force. You need, you know, it is about ultimately the community and the resource, because they're not indistinguishable. And I think that allowing that blending and is very important, because if not, if you don't take care of the resource, the land doesn't get managed. Everything goes away. And we need to work together and do it the right way. And
That's the definition of a good land use attorney.
The right things in the right places, that's what zoning is. You got urban districts, you got resort areas, that's where you put the urban resorts. So you can save the conservation areas. So you can have the residential areas. So there you can eat off the ag areas. It all fits, right? But when you try to, I'm afraid we've backed ourselves into an all or nothing situation.
I'm gonna respond to that by saying this. I tell people sometimes even when they don't ask, I tell people, you have an opportunity to get what you need out of this for the birds, for the fish, for the water, for the whatever, when someone proposes something. It's hard to do it in a blank space, but as soon as somebody steps up and says, I want to build a dot right there, that's your opportunity to say, okay, let's look at this, what the impacts are going to be and what scale it should be and where it should be located precisely, the purpose of it. But also, I have this, there is this other need, that mitigating factor, and now's our time for bargaining. You want to do that? I want you to do that. And you have a little bit of leverage time, right? That's my own. And for me, I could be wrong, but for me, that's my only opportunity. You propose something, you want to build something, that's my chance, and I jump. So I've got a list of things I want done.
Yeah. I mean, the county gets all its money from property taxes. If there's no land use or development, there's no, and it's not about the money. That's not what I'm saying. But I mean, that's how you obtain resources nowadays. You cannot direct the population to work for you every Friday. When you have, like you said, housing is so expensive. The only time you get it is if someone builds 10 or more houses, or they do a hotel development. That's our affordable housing program. It's exactions. And so if we want those, and that's the system we've created. So if we want it, we either have to change the system, which is extremely difficult to do.
And if you really stretch it till the rubber band busts. Yeah. If you really stretch that's multi-gods. That's, you got to honor this guy if you're going to do that with that guy. If you really stretch that concept, I mean, I'd probably have to be stoned to get it clear in my head, but you know, to get it out there and say, you know, to translate that into, oh boy, I can't wait. Mana, I can't wait for the next issue to come up where I can start talking about all the gods they're stepping on. Yeehaw. This can be fun.
And at the same time, it's like, yeah, but that, your gods don't live here. This is the urban district. This is the resort gods, the hotel gods area. So it leads to, you know, your conservation gods live in Hyena. These hotel gods live in...
Well, I think there probably were recreational gods, you know, because play was important. Play was important, and recreation was important.
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a topic for another show, but I mean, like, it was looked down upon if you just surfed all day. Like, if your husband didn't work, oh, what a listless bum. You know, like...
Well, you didn't stay with him. You didn't stay with him because he was useless.
Yeah, you worked. Hawaiian, and that's why I think Bernice Pauley Bishop, she wanted industrious young Hawaiian men and women, because that was the value. I don't know where the recreation thing came from, because Hawaiians were just
Makahiki.
Everything was comfortable. Yeah, for a time.
Yeah.
For a time it was, but it wasn't all year.
No, and you had to earn it. Wow. Okay. So I think in this particular show, folks, I neglected to say you could call in, but I don't know. You'd have to wait for one of us to take a breath. we've said it. I hope Mauna's very good about taking notes. So one of the things I hope you did this time was say, okay, well, that's another show. Okay, well, that's another show. Every show we have, we develop like five or six more. Thank you for this time. I know that your day is stacked, and you've been doing a lot of moving around, and we're grateful when we get to see you on Kauai, and we're grateful for the work that you do, and at least I am. I'm grateful for the work that you do. I don't always like the product of your, you know, of your partnership, of your firm, but, you know, that is what it is, and as long as you keep them on the straight and narrow and honor all the gods. So your job today, Mauna, according to the laws of Makaala, is to make sure you honor all the gods with your projects today.
Hey, thank you so much. I will.
Hey, folks, he means none of that.
we come on.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm gonna go. You know the. What is it? The Chinese Tyson Ye, the Chinese god of money. I'm going to go honor him right now.
Quickly. Red envelopes everywhere, please. Have a wonderful day, Mauna. And folks, this is Pilikia Opono, and we mahalo KKCR for the opportunity. And please go to kkcr.org and hit the donate button if you were at least... interested in what we were about, and we'll see you next month.